And we're holding on Pei Aleph Amud Aleph, the fifth line. We learned yesterday about the importance of bathing and washing your clothes. We said that a lack of bathing or combing your hair, where then the hair gets dirty and full of lice or whatever, can lead a person to be blind. About a person, this is what we call it, irbuvisa, which literally means confusion. So confusion of the hair, in other words, when the hair is all mixed up and confused with dirt and lice, then it can lead to blindness. And if you have that in the clothing, that can lead a person to go crazy. And if on the body, then it leads a person to having boils and sores. So now in this connection, now the Gemara is going to continue talking a little bit about that point, about irbuvisa, about dirt and the effects of it. And then digress to talking about some other things. So Shulchan Mitan, they sent a message from there. You have the voice? Oh, Daf Pei Aleph. Give me the Gemara, I'll find it here. Pei Aleph Amud Aleph, fifth line. So Shulchan Mitan, they sent a message from there, meaning from Eretz Yisrael. He's Zaharu B'Irbuvisa. The first thing they informed everybody is be careful about Irbuvisa, which is, again, this kind of thing where you have lice or dirt, where you have lice or dirt or whatever the Ran says we're talking about both. We're talking about be careful about doing laundry so you don't have irbuvisa on your clothing, and be careful about bathing your body so you don't have irbuvisa on your body. So that way you won't have these various things that we talked about in the Gemara before that result from that. So that was the first thing they sent from Eretz Yisrael. I'll be careful about that. Tosfos says, specifically, we're talking about the laundry. We discussed before in the Gemara that not doing laundry is the more serious thing in a way, because it can lead a person to going crazy, which is even worse than being blind and even worse than having sores. So according to Tosfos, they're especially warning about that. According to the Ran, they're warning about both. The next thing they said is, Hizaharu b'chavura. Also be careful with chavura, meaning with a group. So in other words, be careful to learn Torah in a group. When you're learning in a group, then the Talmidim ask good questions, and that way they sharpen each other, and that way they sharpen the teacher. You have a famous thing, for example, in the Gemara and Tainis, where one of the Chachamim says, I learned a lot from my Rebbeim, and even more from my Chaverim, and even more from my Talmidim. So be careful with that. Different other Mephoshim talk about different possibilities of what Hizaharu b'chavura means. Another point, the Shittim Kometzis brings also that it means be careful to not be around, on the contrary. It means don't be around in the company, in the chavura of Amei Ha'aretz. So you don't end up learning from their ways. And the third thing they sent in this message from Eretz Yisrael, he's Zaharu b'vnei aniyim, be careful with the poor people, be careful with the children of the poor people, make extra effort to teach them Torah, shemehen teitze Torah, because from them Torah is going to come. Why more from the children of poor people? So the Ran says, because they don't have any other business. Unlike rich people have inherited some kind of business or something from their parents, and now they're busy with that. So poor people don't have that. And also another reason is because they're humble. Because of their poverty, they're humble, and that's more conducive to learning Torah. So they sent this message from Eretz Yisrael to be careful with them, because you should realize that Torah is going to come from them. Shanema Yizal Mayim Midoyav, as the Pasuk says in one of Bilam's brachas to the Jewish people, he says, water will flow from Doyav. The simple meaning of Doyav means his buckets. So in context, the Pasuk is saying, Rashi explains on the Pasuk over there, means the kingship of the Jewish people will be long lasting, like flowing water. For that reason, for example, we know that when they anointed the kings of Yehuda, they would anoint them by a spring, that it should be a good siman that their kingship should last long. But here we're dashing in Midoya of Meloshin Dal, Meloshin Pur. So the water of Torah, we know that Torah is compared to water, will flow Midoya from his poor ones, from the poor people. Shemehen takes a Torah, from them Torah will come. So now the question is, the Gemara asks, by the way, why is it that you often find that Tamar Chachamim themselves don't have children who themselves are Talmid Chachamim. Obviously, you have many exceptions. Sometimes you even have, the Gemara says, you have the rarity where you have a Talmid Chacham where he and his son and his son's son learned Torah, and Tosfos explains when also they were able to see each other learning Torah, and then in Torah Persekus Mizadam, then the Torah won't cease from their descendants. But we often find that you have great Talmid Chachamim and their children are not, don't really amount to anything. Why is that? And you would think it should be the other way around. Usually children take after their parents. So Amar Rav Yosef, Shalayomer Torah Yushrihi Lahem. So Rav Yosef says the reason is so that these children won't say, look, the Torah is our inheritance from our ancestors, from our fathers. Therefore, they're not going to bother working so hard on learning Torah because they're going to figure, look, we yaushin in any way as our birthright. Therefore, we don't have to work hard on it. Maharsha says it also means the other way around. It also means, no, not Maharsha, actually, not Maharsha, but other Mefarshim say the vort is that the other way around, that people themselves, the Amei Ha'aretz themselves are apt, this is the Rosh rather explains it, the Rosh explains that the Amei Ha'aretz themselves are apt to say, yeah, you know why these people are Talmid Chachamim? Because their fathers were. Well, our fathers were Talmid Chachamim, so we may as well give up. We have no hope of learning Torah. So therefore, Davka, Hashem makes it that often the children of the Talmid Chachamim are themselves not Talmid Chachamim. That gives the Amei Ha'aretz hope. They can say to themselves, well, these guys, they didn't follow their fathers. Well, I don't have to follow my father either. He may have been an Amei Ha'aretz. I can still grow up to be a Talmid Chachamim. So that's one reason. Rav Sheshes, Breder of Idi, Omar, Kedeshalis Gadru ala Tzibur. Another reason is so that they don't become proud over the Tzibur. Like this, if they automatically become Talmid Chachamim, then they're going to feel very proud. Not only am I a Talmid Chacham, but my father was a Talmid Chacham, and they're going to look down at people. So like this, in order that they don't do that, Hashem makes it that they tend to not be Talmid Chachamim. And for that matter, the Talmid Chacham themselves are not going to feel so proud over the Tzibur. They're going to see that, as a matter of fact, our children are not growing up to be such Talmid Chachamim. Rav Ashi Marzutra Amar Mishpitneishain Misgabrim Ala Tzibur. Rav Marzutra says it's not so they don't. It's because they do Misgabrim, they overpower, or another gear says Misgadrin, like in the previous one, they become proud over the Tzibur. So in other words, Rav Sheshes Breder of Edi's explanation was that Hashem proactively makes that the children are not necessarily going to be Talmid Chachamim in order that they, the children or the parents, as the case may be, will not be such Balei Gaiva. Marzutra is saying, on the contrary, it's when they act, when they are gaivadik, then Hashem causes it that because of that, Hashem punishes them and their children end up not being Talmid Chacham. Rav Ashi Omer, another reason, Mishum Dekori L'Inshi Chamori, because Talmid Chachamim call people, they call the simple people donkeys. Now, so again, not just they're looking down on them, they're looking down on them. And in fact, Maharsha adds that they're saying, by calling them donkeys, in effect, they're saying, as if like by nature, they're incapable of learning Torah. Like as the Talmid Chacham are saying about such people, it may, you know, the same way as an actual donkey is incapable of learning, so are these people. Meanwhile, the Talmid Chachamim who talk that way, they don't realize that it's not a matter of nature, it's a matter of nurture, it's a matter of what you put into it. And these Amei Ha'aretz are just as capable of becoming Talmid Chachamim as you are. So therefore, Hashem makes it, you know what, you're thinking that that's how it is, well then your child himself is going to end up not being such a Talmid Chacham. Ravina Omer, Ravina says another reason, She'ein Mevorchin B'Torah Tchila. The reason why the Talmid Chachamim don't have children who are Talmid Chachamim is because they don't say the bracha on Torah first. So partially the brachas that you say in the morning, Al Divrei Sora and Baharivna and Asher Bachar. So that can mean now it can mean the simple thing. It means exactly like that. They start learning in the morning and they're not careful to make the bracha. So the Meforish printed over here under Rashi's name says exactly that. That it means that they wake up in the morning, they start learning Torah. They're very used to learning Torah. It's the first thing on their agenda. They're not always careful to make the bracha before it. And after all, in the bracha, we say, that we ask that we and our descendants should all be people who know Torah. So therefore, by failing to make that bracha, they're taking that bracha away from themselves. It can also mean, of course, that they do actually say the bracha, but they don't say it with kavana. The point is, in other words, like they're putting down the Torah. They're saying that the Torah is not particularly important to make a bracha. and you want to know how important it is to say the bracha on Torah, the Amar of Yehuda Amar Rab, my dichtiv, what does it mean, a pasuk in Yirmiyah? We have it in the Haftorah of Tisha B'Av morning. Mi ha'isha chacham v'yavin es zois. So the whole pasuk goes like this. Mi ha'isha chacham v'yavin es zois. Who is the wise man who will understand this? V'asher diber pi Hashem elav v'yagida. Who is there that Hashem has spoken with his mouth to him who can tell it? Alma of the ha'aretz. Why has the land become destroyed and desolate? Nitza kamidba m'bli over. It became empty like a desert with nobody passing through. So what does this mean? Rabbi Yehuda is saying, they ask the Chachamim and the Nevi'im, what was it that caused the Churban and the Golos? Neither of them were able to understand it. Neither of them were able to explain it. That's why the Pasuk starts by saying, first, who is the Chacham who can understand this? And apparently they're asking around, and none of the Chacham are able to understand. And they're asking Hashem, Dibra Pi Hashem Elov, the one to whom Hashem's mouth has spoken, meaning the Vim, and they also can't tell until Ad Shepirshei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba'atzmai, until Hashem himself in the next pasuk explains what it was. Dichtiv, the pasuk continues, Vayomer Hashem al Ozvam as Terasi V'Vemer. The pasuk continues, Hashem says, because they abandoned my Torah. Now, the whole pasuk goes, al Ozvam as Terasi, they abandoned my Torah, Asher Nasati Lefehem, that I placed before them, V'loi Shomu B'Kolev Lai Holchuba, they didn't listen to my voice and they didn't go in it. So the question is, Hainu Lai Shomu B'Kolev, Hainu Lai Holchuba, isn't not listening to my voice and not going in the way of the Torah the same thing? So what is the pasuk adding with that phrase? So it means, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, She'ed Mevorchen B'Torah T'chila, it means that they failed to make a bracha to begin with on the Torah. So in other words, so the Ran explains like this. If it was blatantly that people are not observing Torah and mitzvahs, then what do you mean? They ask the Chachamim and they ask the Nevi'im. The Chachamim aren't smart enough. The Nevi'im aren't smart enough to look around and see that there's rampant non-observance of Torah. What do you mean they couldn't tell? Means, in other words, the people are learning Torah. The people are doing mitzvahs. But so the Chachamim and Nevi'im can't understand. So what happened? But Hashem says, Hashem who knows the secrets of people's hearts, he's able to say, Shalei Berucho B'Torah T'chila, they did not consider the Torah important enough to be worthy to make a bracha on it. They weren't learning Lishma. Therefore, they were being mezalzel, they were being careless with the bracha on it. So that's what it means. Lo Yehochu Ba means they weren't going in the way of the Torah in a way that they should realize how important and how vital Torah is and that they should learn it Lishma. So that's what we're saying, that nevertheless, even Talmid Chachamim, unfortunately, you can have their learning not Lishma. You can have their learning it because it's interesting. They can be learning it L'Hisgadurba, for example, in order to pride themselves on it. Like we were saying before about the Talmid Chachamim who pride themselves and look down on the Amei Oretz, they could be learning it because they could be learning it even the worse even Lakanter, where they're doing it in order to attack and in order to attack other people. So whatever it is, the point is that only Hashem could realize that it all began with that. It all began with that, that they weren't making the bracha on the Torah, meaning that they weren't respecting the Torah enough to make that they didn't consider it important enough to make a bracha on it.
Is learning Torah in a rote way? In other words, saying, it's automatic. We have to learn whether we think about it or not, whether we apply it or not. Is that considered like not making a bracha?
So there's different levels in not learning Torah Lishma. Tosfos in a few places in Shas explains, I think we've talked about it before, that there's a difference. The highest thing is to learn Torah Lishma. And as the Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya, it means Lishma in order to connect yourself with the Eibishter. That's the Berucho B'Torah T'chila. Below that—
So what is Torah Lishma?
One second. Let me finish. So now, the next level below that is when a person learns Shaloi Lishma, meaning Tosfos says he's not learning in order to connect with Hashem. He's learning, let's say, because it's interesting, or even because he wants to be honored. He wants that people should call him Rebbe or something. It's not the best thing. On the other hand, the Gemara does say Mitoch Shaloi Lishma Ba Lishma. Eventually, from that, there'll come Lishma. The Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya that it means Mitoch, that even within that there's already the deep down the person is doing a lishma, he just doesn't realize it yet. Then you have the kind of thing where the person is learning the canter in order to use it to attack other people, as we're having in the Gemara over here, where they're putting people down and calling them donkeys or other things like that. Then the Gemara says on such people that it would be better if they weren't created and if they didn't learn. So now you're talking about if a person is learning not in order to be Mekayim. So that
no, I want to know the definition of lishma. That's exactly the object of my question.
To connect with the Eibishter. Now, with it, that's what I'm saying. Though, with you can have, for example, let's say, for example, take for example a person who learns chitas every day. So why is he learning chitas? Ultimately, and you know, look, I mean, I have to. You know, I know it's a takana of the rabbi. I can't. Sometime during my day, I have to do chitas. So hopefully, eventually, I mean, right now he's doing it kind of as a matter of Kabbalah soil, that Abayim said it, and therefore that's why I'm doing it. So that's already a certain madrega in itself, the fact that he's doing it mitzad Kabbalah soil. Eventually, hopefully, he'll reach the level where it's not just Kabbalah soil, I have to do it, but rather it becomes part of him, and it becomes that the Eibishter wants it, therefore automatically I want it. But not everybody achieves that, but that's the goal to strive for.
It still doesn't define lishma.
So that's the thing. So lishma ultimately means that you're doing it in order to connect with Hashem. You're doing it out of a sense of ava and yira. So ultimately, as you go through life, eventually you work on it, and eventually you reach that level where you're doing it from out of ava and yira for Hashem. So the point is, you know, there's any number of places in Sichus where the Rebbe quotes the Gemara and explains that's the idea. In other words, you have also the Bach explains on the tour when we talk about the brachas of Torah, that's what we're expressing in the brachas over there. We're saying, when we say noisein haTorah, means that we recognize that Hashem is constantly giving us the Torah again and again. It's not something that Hashem just gave it and that's it. You know, now we can continue learning it like we would any other science or whatever, but rather that Hashem continues to give it and we're learning it in order to connect with Hashem. So now we're saying at the time of the Churban, the people had lost that mentality. And therefore, what we're saying, in other words, that the Ran is making the point in the name of Rabbeinu Yonah, it's not something so obvious. You would go into you'd go in that time and you'd find the shuls would be full of people davening, and the shuls would be full of people learning. And you'd have people learning and doing mitzvahs and everything all over the place. But only Hashem can see that there was this flaw at the root of it, which led to that therefore their Torah and mitzvahs don't count for what they should, and they weren't able to prevent the Churban and the Golos from happening. The Ran finishes off, by the way, Elu Diver Harava Chosid Zal. This is the words of the Rav, the Chosid, Rabbeinu Yonah, or he's called Rabbeinu Yonah Chosid, among others. They're very appropriate and very, very worthy of the one who said them. In other words, Rabbeinu Yonah is the kind of person, he's the kind of Rishon who could say such a thing and tack a meaning. That it's not just enough to learn Torah just in order to be called Rebbe or because it's interesting or whatever, but in order to connect with the Noisen HaTorah. That's it. So there's, as I said, there's many sichas with Rebbe, many sichas in Maimonides where the Rebbe mentioned this point and the idea, in other words, that it's not just enough to learn Torah, you have to be learning Torah in order to connect to the Noisen HaTorah. And sometimes, unfortunately, you have people back then and now, it was one of the, we know from many sichas and stories that the Friedrich Rebbe tells of the old time Menagdim, for example, who didn't, who they learned Torah in order to make themselves great. And then Chassidus, the Baal Shem Tov and his successors and his Chabraya Kadisha worked a great deal on such people to get them to a state of learning Torah Lishma. There's actually one of those places where there at least one of those places where it ever talks about also the deeper idea of Amma of the Ha'oretz. The Oretz over here also means Ganeden. In other words, that you have, even a person is supposed to get Gan Eden as a result of learning Torah. But now what a person does when he doesn't learn Torah with this mentality is the Rebbe expresses that he separates the Gan from the Eden, like he's separating Gan Eden the Elyon from Gan Eden the Tachten and making it that he's not achieving what he's supposed to as far as transforming himself and transforming the world.
The problem
getting back to the Gemara. So in context of the Gemara, we're saying that's another reason when you have people who learn Torah without that mentality of I'm doing it lishma, then the result is that often their children end up not being Talmid Chacham. Yeah, what?
The problem is also that when they learn Torah, they may learn it lishma, but as soon as they finish learning Torah, suddenly it's as if they hadn't learned anything. What do you do with that?
That necessarily follows. And first of all, that doesn't necessarily follow. In general, when a person learns lishma, it will have an effect on him afterwards. And look, you know, you have in Tanya these days, the Alter Rebbe is talking about the Beinoni. Consider what happens. You have the Beinoni when he's learning Torah and when he's davening, then his Yetzer Hara is completely asleep. Then afterwards, it wakes up again. Nonetheless, though, the fact is that, he never gives in to it because the after effect of his learning and of his davening is powerful enough to keep him on the straight path. So that itself is a good thing. He has tivus afterwards. Okay, you know, he's a bainy. He's going to have tivus. But yeah.
So is it considered Lishma when you connect to
Hashem? The Altarev makes the point. We just had it in yesterday's or 2 days ago, Tanya. The Altarev makes the point that it's considered MS Lamita because at his level, that's the kind of MS that he's capable of achieving. Yeah.
But we're the men. We have to be all strive to be.
So you can learn Lishma, and after you've learned, return basically to what normal life is about.
Too. No, the person is going to have typhus. We're talking about he's not actually going to act on those typhus. If he acts on those typhus, that's a whole different matter. We're not talking about that. We're talking about that he may have those typhus. Yeah, if you see a person who's learning and afterwards, for example, as soon as he closes the Gemara, you see him speaking disrespectfully to people, or you see him cheating in business, or you see him doing other avedas, then yeah, you know, you have good reason to think that maybe his learning Torah wasn't so much lishma, but we're not talking about that. Yeah. Okay, onward in the Gemara. Isi bar Yehud, so now getting back to, so the way we got into all of this was we digressed by talking about, in the Gemara before we were discussing, Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim had disagreed about the respective importance of drinking water versus laundry water. So we have the case over there, you have a city where a spring issues forth from a city, and so they have the water over there. Then the water from it flows through a riverbed, a canal or whatever, and goes to another city. Does the first city have the right to dam up the river in order to keep more of the water for themselves? So one thing we had in a braisa on Peyam and Beis was, suppose that the one city where it comes from has enough for drinking water. They want to be able to use this water for laundry. The other city, meanwhile, needs it for drinking water. Rabbi Yossi says that the first city is entitled to hold back the water for themselves, for their laundry, because of what we said, that laundry is so important because a lack of doing laundry can cause a person to go crazy. So now the Gemara continues on that topic. So the Gemara tells, Isi bar Yehuda le'osel mesivta de Rabbi Yossi tlosa yoyim. For 3 days, Isi bar Yehuda did not come to the yeshiva of Rabbi Yossi to learn Torah. Regularly, he was one of Rabbi Yossi's talmidim, but for 3 days, he didn't show up. Ashkechei Vardimos bar Rabbi Yossi. So after the 3 days, Vardimos, the son of Rabbi Yossi, the Gemara mentions in Shabbos that Rabbi Yossi had 5 sons who were tremendous talmid chachamim, and then the Gemara mentions this Vardimos, who seems to be a 6th one, and the Gemara says actually that's another name for one of the 5. Whatever the case, he was a talmid. He was a son of Rabbi Yossi. He himself was a distinguished talmid chacham. So he met up with Isi bar Yehuda. Omalei my time alei osi ma'ul bei medrash ad abba. So why didn't you come to my father's base medrash for 3 days? Amale, so Isi bar Yehuda tells him, when I don't understand something, I don't understand the reason behind something your father said, Heicha Isai, how should I be coming? I don't know where it said, not Heicha Isai, how can I come? Heicha Isai, where it says. Where is there a source in Torah for this that your father, Rabbi Yossi, said that laundry for city A is more important than drinking water for city B? Mainly you're going to say it's equally important. Fine, I can understand it. Say that's more important. Where is he getting that from? Amalei, so Vardimos says, Le mamar maika Amalei, so tell me what my father said. Dilma yadayna taimei. Maybe I can explain the basis of where he said this from, and then he'll come back to the Beis Medrash. Amalei, so he says, Hod Tanya. So he says, this is what we learned before in the Braisa. Rabbi Yossi, I'm a kvisos and kodemus l'chai achayim, that Rabbi Yossi says the laundry of city A comes ahead of the drinking water of city B, so which on the face of it is necessary for their life. Now we talked about yesterday, okay, most of the Mephoshim explained, we're not literally talking that people of city B are gonna die from thirst. It just means they'll have water, but they'll have to bring it in on donkeys and camels or whatever. They'll have to dig deep for it or whatever. They'll be able to get water. There'll just be a tremendous tircha involved. So, but where is your father, Rabbi Yossi, getting this from? So the question is, Kurom Nolon. So where is there a pasuk that expresses that idea? Omalei, so Vardimos answers him, Dichtiv, because you have in connection with the Orei Miklat, Umigrashehem, so we know you have the Orei Miklat, then around the Ur Miklat, you have an empty space, which is called a Migrosh. Rashi describes on the Pasuk over there, the idea is you leave it empty and it's a Noila ear. It's a beautiful thing for the city that it has. Like nowadays, you have in city planning, a lot of times you'll have a green belt around an area. So this is similar. You'll have a green belt around the city. So you have a migrashehem, these are the empty space, yul of a hemta magrimer. So the pasuk says it'll be for their animals and for their property, ulachol chayosam, and for all their chaya. Now, my chayosam. Now you have to ask, what does the word chaya mean in that context? Ilema Chaya doesn't mean exactly what it sounds like. They're wild animals. So in other words, this will be a grazing area for their domestic animals. And in case anybody owns any wild animals, then they can keep them there also. Well, you don't need that. Vale Chaya b'chal behemah. The fact is, in Lashon Torah, Chaya is included in behemah. We have, for example, the Pasuk says, when it lists the kosher animals, the kosher and non-kosher animals in Parshas Re'eh, so, and in Parshas Shemini, it starts by saying, Zois ha-chaya asher tofu, mikola behema asher al aretz. And you have also, when it says ha-behema, and it lists over there some of the wild animals as well. So we see that to a certain extent, behema and chaya are interchangeable. So, so you're going to tell me that it means literally that they can use this area for things that they need to live. Pshita, well, then that's obvious. The pasuk doesn't need to specify that this area is available for that. Elolav kvisa. So it must be that it means that they can use that area to do their laundry. And why is laundry so important to her? Because we said before, there's the tsar that comes from having dirty clothing, whereas we said it can cause a person to go crazy. So the pasuk is telling us that one of the purposes of that migrash, of that 1,000 or 2,000 area around the city, is that they can do their laundry there. Yeah, you have to remember, laundry in those times wasn't, you don't put it in the washing machine, you know. It means that you dip it in a stream, you beat it on a rock. Yeah, you could also have, for example, in Bava Basra, we talk about, for example, making pits with water. They would have pits with water and with rocks over there that they would use to soak the clothes and beat them on the rocks and so forth. So yeah, the point is that that's one of the purposes that the migrash is available for. Instead of doing it in the city, where in fact in Bava Basra it talks about over there that it's not so simple to have that in the city, because if you have it too close to the houses, it's going to undermine the houses, or the water from it is going to spritz on the houses and damage the walls or whatever it is. So therefore, like this, you have an area outside the city that, among other things, is reserved for that. So we see the fact that the Pasuk calls it Chayosam, which is Maloshon Chayus, shows how important it is. Therefore, Rav Dimos is telling Isi Bar Yehuda, therefore my father, Rav Yossi, had very good reason to say that Kvisosim Kaidemus Lachaya Acherim, it's so important, the Torah itself calls it Chayus, that therefore should take precedence even over the basic necessity of drinking water for other people.
So he explained why he didn't come to shift 3 days.
So that's why he didn't come. He said, because I couldn't understand what your father was getting this from. So I thought maybe I'm going to stop coming. So now that Bar Dimos has convinced him that my father knows what he's talking about and he has a pasuk to back him up. I guess he didn't feel prepared to ask him, whatever. But yeah, he figured maybe he'll find himself another Rebbe. But it doesn't mean he wasn't learning. Chas v'shalom, he wasn't learning during those 3 days. It means he was learning by himself. Or he was thinking, should he maybe go find another Rebbe? But now it won't be necessary yet. Anyway, we said before the Chachamim argue with Rabbi Yossi. We said that in the end, the halacha is that in fact the drinking water for the other city takes precedence over the laundry for this city. I mentioned yesterday, the Alter Rebbe mentions in Tanya, in Igeres Tesayin, that you see that as a precedent for the idea that Alter Rebbe, again, was writing to a city over there where they were having a hard time with Parnassa, and therefore they'd stop giving tzedakah, or they'd reduce the amount they give to tzedakah. And the Alter Rebbe says, look, I understand you're having a hard time, and the Eivish should have rachmanos on you, but nevertheless, you have to realize that you're boss of a dogma, b'chol matamim, all of the delicacies that you expect to have on your Shabbos tables, and now you can't have because of the economic situation, that doesn't take precedence over the basic food and water and clothing for that the poor people in other places need. Yeah.
It seems obvious, doesn't it? I mean, it takes 3 days for someone to die if he doesn't have water. It doesn't take 3 days to die for someone who cannot wash his clothes. So where are we getting...
Well, right, but that was why most of them were shown and explained over here. We don't literally mean that the other place has no water at all. We just mean they would have to get it at inflated prices or with tremendous tircha or whatever. Onward. So we said in the Mishnah, Omer Rav Yossi ein elu nidre inri nefesh. Now we said in the Mishnah that we have the case where a woman makes a neder im erchatz v'im loy erchatz, im eskashet v'im loy eskashet, if I will bathe and if I will not bathe, if I will beautify myself with cosmetics or if I will not. And we went through the whole discussion, how exactly was the neder formulated, where we said that the im erchatz means that she made a neder that if I bathe now, if I bathe today, for example, then I'll be also to bathe in the future. Whereas im loy erchatz just meant a straight out shavua, that I will not bathe, and the same thing in a skashit and moiskashit. Then we had in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yossi had said, these are not nidre inri nefesh, meaning, in other words, so we said, nidre inri nefesh are the kind that the husband can be mefer for his wife. Rabbi Yossi, and according to most Rishonim, that the father can be mefer for his daughter, Rabbi Yossi disagrees and says, that's not nidre inri nefesh, and he gives another example further in the Mishnah of what he means by nidre inri nefesh. So now, iboyelahu. So now the question becomes, Rabbi Yossi, mahu shiyofu mishum dvarim shebeina levena. Granted, according to Rabbi Yossi, he's saying that these nedarim not to bathe or not to put on cosmetics are not considered in your nefesh, according to him. But can the husband be made for on the grounds of dvarim shebeina levena, which we said before? We said at the beginning of the parak that the difference is if it's nidre in your nefesh when he's made for it, then it's mufar forever. Even if afterwards he dies or divorces her, the neder is still mufar, as opposed to nidrim shebeina levena would be that he's made for it as long as she is married to him, but if he dies or divorces her, then the neder goes back into effect. Or we talked about maybe it only goes back into effect when she marries somebody else, whatever the case. The point is, in other words, that it will eventually, it's not a permanent hafar.
The difference if he does it by bezin or he does it himself.
No, if he does it by bezin, then it's forever. Then we're not talking about. Talking about when he does it himself, when he does hafara, he says mufar lich. So if it was nidre inu nefesh. So let's say, for example, we had Rabbi Yossi says, and the Chachamim of course agree with him. Let's say that nidre inu nefesh would be to say that I will never eat a certain kind of pavis. So then he can be made for it, and then she's forever mutter to eat those peiros, even if he dies or divorces her, and even if she marries somebody else, unless she makes a new neder to that effect, then the neder is canceled. As opposed to dvarim shebeina levena, which we're discussing now, let's say, for example, she makes a neder. For example, we're going to discuss in the Gemara later as far as tashmish. So then the husband can be made for it, but only as long as they're married. If he dies or if he divorces her and she marries somebody, that she'll be also to marry somebody else, because the neder on tashmish will still be in effect.
Oh, it's not her own life, but it's just
both. It's the bedrum levena. It affects the relationship between them. Right. We're going to talk about other days. We're going to talk about various examples about him. So the question is, when Rabbi Yossi is saying that ein elu nidre inu nefesh, does he mean the husband can't be made for them at all? Or does he mean he can't be made for them on the grounds of inui nefesh, but he can be made for them on the grounds of dvarim shebeina levena, meaning that he can be made for them for as long as they're married? So Toshma, let's bring a proof. We said in the Mishnah, or actually a Braisa says, or no, the Mishnah itself says, Amar Rabbi Yossi ein elam nidre inu nefesh. The very fact that Rabbi Yossi uses the lashon ein elam nidre inu nefesh. Now, if he meant he can't be made for, then he should say flat out, lo ein made for, or something to that effect. The fact that he uses the expression ein elu nidre inui nefesh, which seems to imply that they're not inui nefesh, but they are something else. Abu dvarim shebeina levena habyam. It sounds like they are dvarim shebeina levena, and therefore you could be made for on those grounds. On the other hand, the Gemara says not necessarily. Dilma lidid hu ka'amalahu. You could say that maybe Rabbi Yossi is saying according to the Chachamim Sheta. He's saying, Lidi D, as far as I'm concerned, I feel the dvarim shebeina levena I have them. I would hold that such an adarim that I won't bathe or that I won't wear cosmetics are not even considered dvarim shebeina levena, because he would hold they're not really affecting so much the relationship between them. So she won't wear cosmetics. So fine, you know. So she, as far as the bathing, I mean, we're going to talk about soon in the Gemara. Apparently, the problem with not bathing is not so much that after a while she's going to start smelling. If nothing else, I mean, sooner or later, first of all, she'll realize that herself and want to be matter neder. But Pashtus, we're maybe talking about where she's only making the neder for a period of time. But second of all, you could also have, you know, just, she's going to be going about her daily activities. She's going to be going washing clothes, for example. She's going to get wet enough in the water doing that. There's going to be other things. She could schwitz on a little perfume or something, let's say, to cover it up. Let's say, so apparently Rabbi Yossi is saying that that's not necessarily dvarim shebeina levena. Really, what we're going to talk about in a couple of lines of the Gemara is that maybe it's particularly grooming her hair around Oisei Makom, which may interfere with Tashmish. So we'll get to that soon. So Rabbi Yossi would be saying, as far as I'm concerned, these things, not bathing or not using cosmetics, are not even Dvarim Shebeina Levena. L'didchu, but according to you, Chachamim, Damritu Havya Nidra Inu Nefesh, you call those Nidra Inu Nefesh? How can you call them that? How is she suffering from them? At least agree to me that they're not in nidre inu nefesh. So in other words, when Rabbi Yossi is saying in the Mishnah, ein elu nidre inu nefesh, doesn't necessarily mean that he holds the dvarim shebeina levena. He's saying even you chachamim at most should say that it's dvarim shebeina levena. Me, I would say they're not even that. So what's the deal? According to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Adaba says that he could be mefer. In other words, that Rabbi Yossi would agree that the dvarim should be in Levena. Rav Huna Amar ain mefer. Rav Huna would hold. So in other words, the Ran says that the husband would mind it. The husband would object to it, and therefore dvarim should be in Levena. Rav Huna Amar ain mefer. Rav Huna says he cannot be mefer according to Rabbi Yossi. Shaloi matzinu shul shemes ba'afar peh. You never find, you never find a fox that dies in the dirt of its own hole. In other words, a fox digs itself a hole, a den, and it knows how to get around over there, and it never loses its way over there and dies of hunger or whatever, not being able to find its way. Metaphorically, in other words, what we mean is the husband regularly has relations with his wife, therefore he knows his way around, and therefore even if she's not grooming her hair over there, then the husband is not gonna worry about it so much. Now the Ran actually says we're not really focusing so much on the. He says that so he mentions the point about the hair. He's not concerned that if she doesn't bathe, then the hair is going to get matted over there, and then the hair may get tangled in the hair over there and get injured. He's not worried about that because the same way as a fox is not worried around this hole that it's going to trip over something. The Rosh says slightly differently. The Rosh,
you're comparing a husband to a fox.
Well, the point is, in other words, the same way as a fox is used to how getting around its burrow, the same way the husband is used to getting around with his wife. The Rosh actually says that it's actually both as far as bathing and as far as grooming the hair. So he specifically mentions both. In other words, the point we have this line in Ksubas as well. By the way, when we had in Ksubas, we had the Perek Hamadu over there. We had the case where the husband puts his wife under a neder to not do things for a certain amount of time, or where the wife makes a neder and the husband was makayimit, as we learned earlier in our Masechta. So we had this discussion over there also. Interestingly, over there actually the Gemara took a different tack on it. There, the Gemara was explaining, not really according to the Yossi's opinion, but rather within the Chachamim's opinion, and it had the opinions flipped around, of Adaba Abba saying that he can't be Mefer, and Rav Huna saying that he could. So Tosfos mentions over there, and in a couple of places, sometimes you have what are called Sugyas HaMischalfos. Sometimes you have two Sugyas, which discuss the same point, but they take opposite tacks on it. So same people and everything, but still, like in one place, they're discussing according to one way of looking, according to the Yossi, and in the other way, according to the Chachamim. The Ran mentions over here that the halacha, the Ran says that that he holds the halacha would be like the chachamim in our Mishnah. So they are in fact considered nidra inu nefesh. So the husband can be made for them altogether. On the other hand, and he brings various reasons why we should say that. One being rochad b'ram malacha karabim. On the other hand, the Rambam paskins like Rav Huna over here, like Rav Huna, according to Rav Yossi, that the only reason he can be mefer is because of dvarim shebeinu levena. So he can't be. So according to the Rambam, in other words, when he's mefer this neder, it would only be that he can be mefer it, and the hafara remains in effect as long as they're married, but not if they get divorced or if he dies. Yeah. So it may come out. In other words, according to the Rambam, it's not really sugyas and mischalfus. It may not be sugyas that contradict each other, but rather, since over here we might say the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi against the Chachamim, the Gemara is going to point out later that all the Mishnayos in our Perek are according to Rabbi Yossi. So that would be a reason to paskin like Rabbi Yossi, even against the Chachamim. And then within that, we would paskin like Rav Huna's understanding of Rabbi Yossi, as you have it in the Gemara Ksuvos.
So we said before about the water.
Yeah.
With the water, with the drinking water, laundry, the lach is not like him at that, right?
We said that's as far as laundry versus drinking water, right? But that's not a Mishnah. That's not a Mishnah in our Perek. That's something else. That's a Braisa that we brought in order to substantiate what Rabbi Yossi, we asked. How can Rabbi Yossi say that? How can Rabbi Yossi say that bathing is not, that a lack of bathing is not considered nidra inu nefesh, when he holds that on the other hand laundry is? And we said that actually laundry, according to Rabbi Yossi, is even more important than bathing. Yeah. So the Gemara says, Tanya Kava say that Rav Adaba Abba. We learn a Braisa like Rav Adaba Abba's understanding of Rav Yossi. The Braisa says, Dvorim sheyesh ben inui nefesh mefer, things that involve inui nefesh, where she's actually afflicting and then depriving herself of something, then the husband can be mefer, and then he can be made for whether it applies between him and her or between her and somebody else. So let's say, for example, So say, for example, the Ran gives an example that she made a neder that the peiros of my husband will be osur to me. So he can be mefer, and now those peiros are mutter. What if she said, for example, the peiros of Pliny are also to me. Also, the husband can be mefer, because that's nidra in her nefesh, because she's depriving herself of something.
Just one person.
Doesn't matter, but yeah. On the other hand, well, so we had before, we had actually an Ayin Tessim and Beis, we had that, let's say, if she had said that it was, so we said, for example, yeah, if she said the peiros of a certain country are, so that's what Rabbi Yossi actually had said in the Mishnah, that if she says the peiros of a particular country are also to me, you can't necessarily be made for that, because okay, don't get food from that country. And then we discussed about a storekeeper or whatever, yeah, that was all according to Rabbi Yossi. But now this Braisa over here is saying that whether it's involving her or whether it's involving him or somebody else, then he can be mefer. On the other hand, she'ein behen inui nefesh. On the other hand, the Braisa continues, when there's no inui nefesh involved, beiner levena mefer, then he can only be mefer insofar as they affect the relationship between him and her. Beiner levena chenim ain't a mefer, but not insofar as they affect the relationship between her and other people. Ketzad, what is the Braisa says, what do we mean? What are examples? Omra koinam peiros alai. Suppose she said a koinam that peiros are also to me, a certain kind of peiros. Yofer, hareza yofer, then he can be mefer because that's nidra inu nefesh. Now, what about when it's not in nidra inu nefesh? Koinam she'eni oisa l'fi ava. Suppose she says a koinam that I am not going to do malacha for my father's benefit. In other words, like this, up until now, she was doing malacha she was serving her father food or whatever. Now she's making a neder that the ability to do that should be also for her. Now that's not nidru inu nefesh. There's no inu nefesh involved in not serving her father. It's not vonim shebeina levena either, because it's not between her and her husband. It's between her and somebody else. Or for example, lafi achicha, or she says, I'm not going to do malacha anymore for your brother, lafi avicha, or for your father, or lafi achi, or for my brother. Or, for example, she says, "V'shaloi etan teven lefnei behemtecha or mayim lefnei bekarcha." Suppose she says, for example, "I'm making a neder that I won't put straw in front of your domestic animals, or I won't put water in front of your cattle." So now those kinds of things. So the Ran points out, we learned in Ksubas, actually, we had the discussion over there of the various malachas that the woman is expected to do around the house, that she has a shibud to the husband. We did mention, actually, that she is responsible to feed his animals. On the other hand, the Ran says that we also learned over there that once she brings in several shvachas, if she has several maidservants, or she has enough money to be able to buy maidservants or whatever, then depending on how, if you have one, she's potter from certain things. If she has two, she's potter from certain other things, etc., because she delegates them to the shvachas. And we said there that once she has a certain number of shvachas, then she's potter from feeding his animals. So therefore, that would be what we're talking about over here then. So then it's not dvorim. So now it's not dvorim shebeina levena. That's one point. There is also actually all the Mephoshim over here point out that point that yes, in principle she is chayev to do those things. However, once she has enough shvachos, then she's not responsible to do those things anymore. With that said, though, actually, the Ritva has a different explanation. He says there's a difference between there's the basic malachas that she has to do around the house that we learned over there in Ksubas. For example, things like nursing the baby, things like preparing and serving food for him, and so on and so forth. Where those are making the bed and so forth. Those are like essential malachas that she has, no matter what, she has a shibud to do those. No, the point is the Ritva is saying, no, like this. All the Mephoshim here on the daf are saying that we're talking about shvachas or no shvachas. In other words, according to them, if there are no shvachas, then yes, she would actually be responsible to feed his animals, and therefore we can't say that she could make a neder against that because he has a shibur on her. On the other hand, the Ritva is saying no. Even within the 11 malachas that we learned over there that she's responsible to do, we can distinguish between the ones that are more essential, like cooking the food. Even fine, she has enough shvachas, she can delegate it to one of the shvachas to cook the food. If she doesn't, then she has to cook the food herself. That kind of thing, though, either way, is considered one of the more essential malachas. And then you have the ones that she's never allowed to delegate, for example, making the bed. Then you have ones like, for example, feeding the animals. As much as she has a shibud for those, it's not such a strong shibud, the ritva learns. It's not as essential as some of the other ones. Therefore, even with no shvachos, if she makes a neder that she's not going to do it, then fine, the neder can override that weak kind of shibud that she has to do that. Anyway, so those kinds of things.
So what are the shibudim? The exact number of shibudim that she has. She cannot desist from that.
So altogether, there are 11. Altogether, we learned over there in Ksubas, and the Rambam summarizes in Hilchos Isharos. Altogether, a woman who doesn't have any shvachas has 11 different things that she has to do around the house. Then we learned over there in Ksubas. Once she has one shivcha, then she can delegate one of the jobs to that. Shivcha, when she has another one, she can delegate another couple, and so on and so forth, until it gets to the point when she has four shvachas, then she can delegate pretty much all the jobs, or then she can delegate, I think, 8 out of the 11 jobs to the shvachas, and she only has the three or four that she has to do for herself, make her husband's bed, and wash his face, hands, and feet, and pour him a cup to drink, and things like that.
When there's no shvachas, what are the ones that she has to do?
Then altogether you have 11.
Yeah, but which ones?
I don't remember the entire list, but there's those three. There's feeding his animals. There's baking. There's nursing the baby. There's doing laundry. I forget what all of them are, but you have a whole list over there. Yeah.
Where is it referenced?
It's in Ksumas. We had it in the sixth parak of Ksumas. We had several Mishnayos on the subject. Yeah, it was a few months ago. Yeah. Okay. Onward. So all of those kinds of things in Yochel Lahafer, those kinds of nidorim, he cannot be mefer because those are not nidra inu nefesh and those are not dvarim shebeinu lebeinu. When she's saying, I won't do malacha for your father or my father or what have you, it's not beinu lebeinu. And when you're talking about that, she says, I won't feed the animals anymore. So again, if we say that it's a matter of having the shvachas, she has the shvachas, therefore she's delegating it to the shvachas. Therefore, it's not dvarim shebeinu lebeinu for her not to do it. According to the ritva, the vort is, even if she doesn't have the shvachas, it's not such a strong shibud that she shouldn't be able to override it with a net.
The only thing is you don't feed them a diet and there's no bonus for that.
No, so okay, so she'll delegate somebody else to feed them or she'll whether if there's a shivcha, but even if not, whatever. Yeah. Fine. In fact, actually it mentions over here in the notes by me that the Kesef Mishnah actually explained. Now there we talk about giving the animals food. We actually didn't really discuss in Ksubas the whole matter of giving them water. So the Kesef Mishnah explains the vote is to water them would involve going down to the river and bringing buckets of water. And it's not generally the normal thing for women to do that. So therefore we don't make her do that. Anyway, so those kinds of things you can't be made for. Now, then you have a third category, shaloi echkol, suppose she says that I won't put on eyeshadow, shaloi efkoi, so I won't do pikus, which you have a few different explanations, what pikus is, there's different explanations Rashi and Tosfos give at different places in Shas. It can mean combing her hair, it can mean putting on rouge to make her face red, it can mean braiding her hair, whatever the case, some kind of beauty treatment. So if she says, I'm not going to do that, or she says, I won't have relations. Those kinds of things, the Braisa says, it can be made for because they're dvarim shebeinu lebeinu. They affect the relationship between them. And then you have a fourth group, if she says, I won't make your bed, I won't pour a cup for you, which we learned, those are the things that we said in Tzubas, she has to do no matter what, even if there are shvachas. I won't wash your face, hands, and feet. He does not have to be made for those because he has a shibud on her to do that, and his shibud overrides her net. Even though we learn in various places in Shas that we say that hektish, among other things, is able to take away a shibud, and nedarim, we learned earlier in our Masechta, are a type of hektish, but when it comes to the husband's shibud over his wife for certain malachas, the chachamim strengthen that and make that powerful enough that the neder cannot override it. So therefore, he doesn't even need to be mefer because there's no neder over here. On the other hand, Rav Gamliel says he does have to be mefer. Shenemar lo yachol dvaroi, because after all, the pasuk says that you're not allowed to transgress your word. So in other words, even midaraisa, the neder is not chal. Midirabbanon, you have to be mefer so that she doesn't in the future become careless with nedarim. The Ran says this is really only an asmachta. It's not really a thing. It's not really a thing daraisa. because it's only an asmachta. On the other hand, Tosfos says that no, this is an actual drosha. He actually learned that Rav Gamliel is holding that it's actually that it's actually deraisa. And then Tosfos says, because soon the Gemara is going to ask, what about there's a other Tanoim who learned something else from that pasuk? How are they doing that? If it was only an asmachta, there's no problem using having multiple things learned from the same pasuk. Anyway, so. So the Gemara continues. Davar Acher, another explanation. When it says lo yachal dvarei, when it says he should not profane his word, mikan l'chacham she'in matir nidrei atzmi. From here we learn that the chacham cannot be matir his own nidrei. So in other words, so the Ran explains like this. Rav Gamliel is saying that even something that's not called a neder, even if it's only a davar, it's only dvarei, nevertheless he shouldn't transgress it. And then the Davar Acher is saying that we're learning something else, that we mean that when it's a full-fledged neder, a chacham, even though he has the ability to be matur neder, he cannot be matur his own neder. So now, having gone through this braisa, so with the reason why we brought in this braisa is, again, we were discussing what does Rabbi Yossi hold about when she says that I won't bathe or I won't wear cosmetics. Is that considered dvarim shebeinu levena? Is that, he said, it's not in any nefesh. Is it considered dvarim shebeinu levena, or is it considered nothing at all? Is it considered not the kind of neder that the husband can be made for at all? We said Rav Huna said he can't be made for at all, and Rav Ada Bar Ava said he could. So now the braisa is supporting Rav Ada Bar Ava because man shaminan de omer shel echkol v'shel efkas dvarim shebeinu levena havin. Which Tana have we seen says that saying that I won't wear eyeshadow or efkos, however we define that, is considered dvarim shebeinu levena? Rav Yosi, because the chachamim would say it's inu nefesh. V'katoni de mefer mishum dvarim shebeinu levena. And the braisa says he can be mefer on those grounds. So we see therefore that even according to Rav Yosi, he can be mefer. The difference is he can only be mefer on the grounds of dvarim shebeinu levena, which means that the hafara will only remain in effect as long as they're men.
And is that the halacha?
So that's what we said before. The Ram discusses that on the face of it, the halacha ought to be like a chachamim, because after all, yochid b'rabim, halacha k'rabim. So therefore, the halacha ought to be that it's nidre inri nefesh. And for other reasons as well, the Ram explains that we're going to have later on, in the parak. On the other hand, he says the Rambam paskins like Rabbi Yossi, that it's only that, and we would say that you can only be mefer because it's vorem shebein alavein.
So what is it?
So that's what it is. Yeah, machlokas rishonim. As usual, we don't have.
So how does the Beis Din?
What?
How does the Beis Din slide between?
Usually, when you have such a machlokas rishonim, usually you'll have both opinions will be brought in Shulchan Aruch. Usually, you'll have in Shulchan Aruch it'll bring both opinions, and then you may have to be machmir like one of them. I didn't look in Shulchan Aruch this time to see whether it's so, but if it is, then that's how it is.
No, but what does the Beis Din do when they have a case such as this one, and they have to slice it off? What do they do?
Probably tell the husband, "You want to be mefer, go ahead, but you should know that your hafara may only be in effect as long as you're married." So then, in that, if a Beis Din is involved anyway, a Beis Din can be matir neder. That's different. Well, hataras nedarim for sure is effective forever. Yeah. Okay. Onward. We said in the braisa, we said one case where she makes a neder that I won't have relations. So the braisa gave that as an example where he can be made for on the grounds of dvarim shebeinu levena. Question is, what's the scenario? What exactly did she say? If she made the neder that the hana of tashmish with me is going to be also to you. So she's putting tashmish with her off limits. Well, lama li hafara, why would the husband even need to be made for it? Hamishu bedisle, she has a shibud to him that she has to be available for that, and she can't override that with a neder. So the husband shouldn't need to be made for it at all. Ela ba'imeres hanas tashmish echalai. So evidently it must be the other way around, where she says the hana of tashmish with you is also to me. So how does that work? Doesn't that have the same effect? The reason why it works for Chidur Rav Kahana, based on what Rav Kahana says, which we've had a few times in our Masechta, the Amar Rav Kahana, Hanas Tashmish Yolacha, that if she says the Hana of Tashmish with you is also to me, or the other way around, if she says Hana of Tashmish with me is also to you, she doesn't have the ability to do that. He can nevertheless convince her or compel her or whatever to have relations with him because the neder is ineffective. She doesn't have the ability to take away that hana from him. But Hanov Tashmishcha Olai, but if she says the other way around, the Hanov Tashmish with you is also to me, Yofer, then he does need to be mefer she'ein ma'achilin as adam davar ha'osuloi, because you can't make a person eat or enjoy something which is also to him. In other words, in effect, what it is, yes, the fact is it has the same effect. It makes it that he can't have tashmish with her. But the way it was formulated makes it, in other words, she's saying, this is a hana which I am denying myself. Well, therefore, therefore, now you can't make a person eat something which is also to him. Therefore, it is a real neder, which is in effect. However, he can be made for it on the grounds of dvarim shebein lebein.
Well, she really wants to mean she keeps saying it over and over.
If she keeps saying over and over, then you're going to have a problem. Then you have what we learned in Ksubas about meredness, where she refuses to have tashmish and refuses and whatever. And then we had the various dinim over there. What happens? Yeah. Okay. The Gemara says now getting back to, we said before, at the end of the Braisa, we had Rabbi Gamliel saying that, again, you had several Nedarim, which the Tanakama of the Braisa, which we said is appointed of Yosi, had said there are certain Nedarim which, if she makes them, he doesn't even need to be made for them because he has a shibud on her for it. But Rabbi Gamliel said he should be made for because, after all, it says lo yachol dvar. So now let's analyze that. It means he shouldn't profane, he shouldn't desecrate his word. So in other words, that's what the Rana said. Even though it's only his word, even though it's not a full-fledged neder, nevertheless, he shouldn't desecrate it.
Referring to her.
In other words, that even though she said something which is not, it can't really be an actual neder because the husband's shibud overrides it, nevertheless, she shouldn't transgress it, and therefore better that the husband should be made. So the Gemara says, Man Tana Hodetanya. In that case, which Tana is it that would say the following brice? Dvarim hamutarim, when you have things that are technically mutter, va'achirim nagu b'hen isur, but you have other people consider them to be osur, i'ata rashori linik b'hem heter k'dei levatlon, you are not allowed to act in a way of heter in front of them in order to be mevatel them, in order to tell them that this is not in fact osur and take away their minhag. The problem is that then they might end up being makel on other things as well. So how do we know that? Mishum shenema lo yachol dvarim, because the pasuk says he shouldn't transgress his word. So you're not allowed to just profane and transgress the word. But dover acher, then the braisa continues another explanation. Lo yachol dvarim mikam the tamid chacham shein mefer nidrei atzmo. When it says lo yachol dvarim, from here we learn that tamid chacham cannot be mefer his own nid, cannot be matir his own nidarim. Mani Rav Gamliel he. So all of this would have to be according to Rav Gamliel, because Rav Gamliel. So again, we had in the Braisa before Rav Gamliel had made these points. So now when we have a Stam Braisa, then we realize it would be according to Rav Gamliel. So the Ran brings in this connection that yes, you see from this that if a person was noyig, for example, that he's not going to eat meat or drink wine during a certain time, let's say, for example, during the 9 days, he doesn't give that as an example, but let's say if he wants to later on do it, he's going to need Hataras Nedarim. So there is a good deal, there's an entire simon in Shulchan Aruch, in Hilchos Nedarim, simon Resh Yud Dalet, that deals with this whole matter of minhagi. When you have something that's a minhag of a community, to what extent is it considered a neder such that if they want to undo it, they would need Hataras Nedarim? Because there can be a difference. After all, did they take it on themselves or did they inherit it from their parents? If they inherited it from their parents, then that's a different matter. The Gemara tells us in Psachim, then you have a matter of Al Titash Toras Imecha. You're not allowed to just abandon the Torah of your mother. So it's not such a simple thing. When you have a minhag, which often has the force of a neder that you inherited from your parents and from your community, then you can't necessarily, it's not, sometimes even we say you can't even be matur neder. Sometimes we say that even Ataras Nedarim is not going to be effective for it because it's so strong. Chachamim make such things, so that Minhagim of Kehillah is so strong that even Ataras Nedarim may not work. So you have a whole simon in Shulchan Aruch, like I said, that deals with the ins and outs of that, but the attacker becomes a big point when a person wants to change their minhagim in one way or another. To what extent are they allowed to? To what extent are they allowed to be matir neder? And to what extent do we say that even Ataras Nedarim will not be effective for it? What?
Minhag
is sotari. He writes. So that's when you have a minhag of the Jewish people in general. Here we're talking about the minhag of a specific kahila or a specific family or whatever. But yeah, even so, many times it has such strength and you can't be made for it. Yeah, you can't be matter it. Yeah. Okay. Shukriya, everyone.